Do you know when you're in the pub and an old football match comes on, a rocket of a shot hits the bar and bounces out? And then somebody says, do you ever wonder what would have happened if that had gone in? Imagine if we'd scored that. What if we'd won that game?
Then everyone has an opinion. Well, the manager would probably have kept his job. We could have gone in to win the league that year. Ah, we still would have messed it up. We were shite anyway. Such fine margins that could have potentially massive consequences.
In this series, we look at some of the biggest what-ifs in football history. What happened? What could easily have played out very differently? And what we think might have happened instead? This is Outside the Box.
The 1988 UEFA European Championship Final.
And here's Robins. And did it get the deflection? Was it Robins or Pierce?
Attention. Attention, Kostadinov.
What?
Yes. No. No, the linesman says no. The linesman says no.
I think they should really stop flogging a dead horse, basically. It's over. It's finished.
This week, what if Alex Ferguson had been sacked as Man United manager in 1990? Hello, my name is Dave Fleming, formerly of Football Podcast at the End of the Day, which I think at one stage got as many as 12 listeners. And joining me today is Mr. Gerard O'Shea. Ger, hello.
How are you, Dave?
Very well, thank you very much. How are you getting on?
I'm good. I suppose like a lot of people, we're doing these podcasts remotely. We're in different parts of the country due to COVID restrictions. So a little bit weird doing these in different rooms, but here we go.
Yeah, utilizing a technology that maybe none of us had heard of a year ago, and now it's entered the dictionary as an actual word. Are you Zooming?
Are you Zooming? Absolutely. So we're Zooming this podcast anyway, where we're talking about a game that happens on the 7th of January, 1990. Manchester United have been drawn away to Nottingham Forest, managed by Brian Clough, in the third round of the FA Cup. At that point, United haven't won a match in any competition in 2 months, and out of the previous 35 games have won 9. They're close to the bottom of the old First Division. They're out of the League Cup. They're now heading to Forest, who knocked them out of the FA Cup the previous year, who have won the League Cup the year before, are about to retain that competition again. And defeat for United here would mean their season effectively over a week into the new year.
Yeah, unless they get sucked into a relegation fight.
Indeed. And for their manager, Alex Ferguson, who already had several fans calling for his sacking by now, it would mean a fourth season at the club without a trophy. In the run-up to the game, United were plagued by a raft of injuries, their talisman Brian Robson, and big money signings like Neil Webb and Paul Ince. So most of the pundits are tipping United to lose. The likes of Eamon Dunphy, Gordon Banks, all suggesting that Forest are going to win the game. Instead, United bring a raft of youngsters in on the day, one of whom, Mark Robbins, scores the only goal of the game early in the second half. And despite a goal being disallowed late on for Forest, Forest being denied a penalty and having a few other good chances that they miss, United hold on.
Now, United go on that season to actually win the FA Cup in May. They beat Crystal Palace in the final in a replay. They follow up the next year by beating Barcelona 2-1 in the final of the European Cup Winners' Cup. And 2 years after that, they finally end a 26-year wait for the league title. The rest, as they say, is history. United under Ferguson become the dominant team over the next 20 years. They win 13 Premier League titles, 4 more FA Cups, 4 League Cups, and 2 Champions Leagues, including their famous treble in 99, as well as doing 2 League and Cup doubles. Ferguson retires in 2013 with a fucking stand in Old Trafford named after him. United are champions of England again. He's lauded as one of the all-time greats in the game, and his record of 38 trophies with the club surely never going to be surpassed. But what if, on that fateful day in January 1990, United hadn't beaten Nottingham Forest?
It's certainly an intriguing question. And to join Dave and I to discuss this is the author, motivational speaker, entrepreneur, and head of talent for the city of Stockholm, a man of many talents and Manchester United fan, Patrick Hamilton-Walsh. Patrick, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, Jared. And thank you as well, Dave, for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
How much do you remember about this time yourself?
I remember a lot about it, actually, because it was sort of my time of coming to age. When it comes to football and, you know, just pre-puberty, whenever football was becoming a more important stage of my life. I was born in 1978, and we had the 1986 FA Cup win, which really sort of was the So I grew up thinking that the FA Cup was more important than the league. I thought whoever won the cup, you know, the last game of the season in England was the best team in England. And I didn't actually start thinking about it any other way until we won our first league, which is quite convenient.
Yeah. Well, look, let's have a little bit of background here to where United actually are at this point. You mentioned there, Patrick, they had won the FA Cup in the 80s, but how did they get to this stage where one defeat could conceivably mean that United sack who ends up becoming their most successful manager of all time before he even gets started? They hadn't won a league since 67. Busby had resigned in 69, and they'd had a fair few ups and downs since then. You'd had Wilf McGuinness, Busby came back again very briefly, Frank O'Farrell, Tommy Doherty, Dave Sexton, and then Ron Atkinson. They'd come and gone as manager, varying degrees of success. They were actually relegated in 1974 under Doherty, but they stuck with him, bounced back, won the FA Cup in 77. Then they win a couple more under Atkinson in 83 and 85. Now, like you said, Patrick, the FA Cup, we all can remember when the FA Cup meant a huge amount more than it does now. It's kind of a shame the way it's gone. But their league form, which was kind of the board's priority, left a lot to be desired. Since the last time they'd won the league in 67, the English league had been won by Man City, Leeds, Everton, Arsenal, Derby County, Liverpool, Forest, and Villa. And United hadn't even really come close. But I think particularly galling for United then and now, I think, was the form of Liverpool. Liverpool were the dominant team, not just in England, but in Europe at the time. I read that from 73 to 86, Liverpool win 9 out of 14 league titles. They win 4 European Cups, still more than United have won to this day. They win 4 FA Cups, 4 League Cups, and a UEFA Cup, an astonishing period of dominance. So November 86, United are in the relegation zone again in the league. They sack Ron Atkinson. And they turn to Alex Ferguson of Aberdeen to try and restore them to where they feel they belong, rightly or wrongly, at the top of English football.
Can I ask you there, as two Manchester United fans, Patrick, from County Tyrone, yes, how much does the Liverpool thing matter to you as a United fan not from Manchester?
It's probably 45%. Of being a United fan for me. Actually, 55% is how much I love United. 45% is how much I don't love Liverpool. And again, you really summed that up so well there, Dave. And I will just say one more thing. I think it was the Liverpool teams which were actually so dominant, because just up until that as well, don't forget Everton had such a great squad and probably were denied a Champions League win if it wasn't for the fact that the ones from across the park had got everyone banned. So yeah,
very true.
I sort of have a bit of sympathy for Everton in that regard, that they didn't really get to reach those heights when their club was at that peak with some of the greatest players to play the game in England. You know, when you look at some of the players they had, like Gary Lineker up front and those guys. So but we can only deal with what it was. And for a United fan at that age, which is quite bizarre, I almost felt we were successful enough because we had those two FA Cup wins during that decade, believe it or not, but we seemed to always get a result against Liverpool as well. Yeah. It was, you know, people talk about us playing them as being our cup final, and it almost felt like it was. You know, we sort of had the Scouse Busters, you know, with Whiteside and Hughes and these guys. And they always seem to be able to pull out a result against this great Liverpool team and great Liverpool teams as well. And I think this was one of the reasons why things started to heat up quite a lot for Ferguson during the 89-90 season, because he sold off Paul McGrath for 400,000. He sold off Whiteside for 700,000 and a few others. And these lads were legends, you know, within the club. But again, he had to do it. As much criticism as he got for that, it almost saved him from the same amount of criticism in 95 when he sold off Hughes, Ince and Kanchelskis.
That's a really good comparison.
Because he's obviously said it years, I mean, he said it at the time, and it's come up a few times, the whole wanting to knock Liverpool off the perch as the sort of his stated goal when he comes in 86. I mean, I don't know, you were obviously in short pants then as a young lad, but remember the Ferguson appointment and any thoughts around it at the time, or how much would you have been aware of him getting appointed?
I was aware of it because I remember we were in my grandmother's house, and it sort of came on the BBC News that this knight in shining armour had been signed from Scotland to become the new manager. And I remember in my grandmother's house, there's a few United fans, of course, but we also had a few Spurs fans. And my grandfather also was a Toffee. He was an Everton fan. So I remember it being warmly accepted. And I remember being excited because everyone else was excited. And that's where the first that Ferguson came to me. I wasn't, of course, at that age, I wasn't aware of anything he had done with Aberdeen or Scottish football, I didn't have that level of awareness. But at the same time, I wasn't tuned into Scottish football at all.
His future potential, I mean, that's unlimited, really. I mean, he could do anything, I think, that he puts his mind to. I don't know, really. The sky's the limit, I think.
You look at some of the stuff he'd done. He'd won the Scottish League in his second year, which is the first time, I think, in 15 years at the time that neither Celtic or Rangers had won it. And there's a quote from around then, which is really interesting, when we're talking about 1990 and the FA Cup, that he wins in reality, but we're saying, what if he didn't? He talks about that winning that league was the achievement which united us. I finally had the players believing in me. So that was the result that sort of kickstarted Aberdeen. And in the remaining, 6 years, he won the league again twice, including back-to-back, including a double, 4 Scottish Cups in 5 years, the League Cup, beating Real Madrid in the final of the Cup Winners' Cup. And one of the stats that from 1965 till now, whatever that is, 56 years, there's only been 4 years that either Celtic or Rangers haven't won the league. And 3 of those were Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But he comes in anyway. He comes into United to help knock Liverpool off their perch. What hasn't exactly started brilliant. He gets them from the relegation zone to 11th in the first season. They come second the following year. Unhelpfully, I suppose, Liverpool win the league and come very close to the double again. But it starts to look like that's the exception rather than the rule. They go back to 11th the following year. They don't trouble the cup. And as you said, the FA Cup at the time, I remember that from the late 80s and even into the early 90s, that the FA Cup was as big, if not in some cases bigger than the league. But United haven't troubled it. They haven't troubled the League Cup. Liverpool have won the league again. They're about to win it yet another time. As you said, he sold these fans' favourites like Whiteside and McGrath. They've had the massacre at Main Road, where a pretty poor, ordinary City side have beaten them 5-1. And it all leads up to the fanzines looking for him to be sacked, to do the decent thing, to resign. And famously at the defeat at home to Palace, the 3 years of excuses and it's still crap, ta-ra, Fergie banner. Yeah. Which is just 2 weeks before Forest at the City Ground in the FA Cup, and the point at which I suppose we're going to jump off on a parallel universe.
Yeah. Before we jump off, Patrick, I think myself and Jerry are a little younger than you. Early 90s is like maybe 91, 92 is probably my earliest kind of real memories of United. So I'm not really there at the time of this. But I want to ask you, the board have said since that they were never going to sack him. They weren't going to sack him. That even if he had lost that game, there was no way they were going to sack Ferguson.
I mean, there was no stage as a board of directors that we ever sat down to discuss the position of Alec Ferguson. And I think internally, none of us had actually lost that confidence. Although I do accept that some of the supporters were calling for his blood at that time. But he wasn't as close as some people believe in actually, being sacked.
I've got my opinion on this, but I'm going to put you on the spot now. Cards on the table, straight up. If United lose to Forest, does he get the sack? Yes or no?
I think he does. I think it's very nice for the board to come out and say they always had it right the whole time and they always supported the guy the whole way through. But it was the momentum around this guy coming down, you know, from Scotland, you know, to show the English how to do it and failing miserably for so many years, having spent like 2.2 million on a defender earlier in the year in
Gary Pallister, was it?
Gary Pallister. And, you know, spending a lot of money, losing a lot of the favourites and things like that. There was a fever around getting this man out of the club and the fans had turned against them. And not just the fans like in social media like we have today, but in the stands. And when fans in the stands turn against you, it's never nice. But it was a different time, of course. And I think Ferguson went back to the roots in those last, what would have been his last days. Talk about the Busby Babes, where United were ruling Europe with a bunch of teenagers and lads in their early 20s. And whenever these big players hadn't performed for him, coming up to Christmas, he started throwing in young guys. And it was actually only on the 30th of December, a week before this match with Nottingham Forest that we're discussing, that Mark Robbins, who at the time was only 20 years old, scored his first goal for United. And it was actually a draw, of course, against Wimbledon. And that was to rescue a point. But if it wasn't for that, this Mark Robbins guy might not have been thrown in a week later to play against Nottingham Forest. And again, for people listening, they may not realise, but Nottingham Forest today may not seem like the giants that they were at that time, but they had just a decade before that won back-to-back European Cups. A massive achievement for any club, never mind a one from a sort of regional town in the north of England.
We're talking about a serious team here, but I agree, Patrick. I think, like you say, the board will come out. The board would say mass if they were asked. They'll come out and say, yeah, of course. No, we were never going to sack him. Of course we weren't.
So you'd be a foolish board member who'd go, oh, we would have happily thrown away all this success. We'd have made a short-term rash decision. Of course you're not going to say it, even if it was true.
Yeah, exactly. Look, my opinion straight up is Ferguson gets sacked immediately. He's gone after the game. There's the next league game is they've got Derby at home again, and it's they're not the title winning Derby of a few years previously, but they're still a decent side. The fans are openly in revolt. The banners were being held up. There was the fanzine articles. There's your man, Pete Molyneux, I read recently. He was the guy who had that Tarrah Fergie, 3 years of excuses and still crap. He gets lots of abuse now, and he's kind of like a joke, notorious figure in the stand where people still talk about the guy who wanted Ferguson sacked. But I've seen footage of it when that banner was raised, the whole crowd, when they saw what it said, cheered and applauded. The fans were absolutely against him. And also, the club were in a really bad spot. Like, they were hovering just above the relegation zone. I think without the BAM of cup progress, and again, a really important, the FA Cup competition, and beating Forest, a big, important team, without that, losing that, the atmosphere is just so bad. The fans are so much against. They're on the backs of Ferguson and on the backs of the board. The board, I think, would have shown self-preservation by pulling the trigger. They've shown only 4 years previously, the man that Ferguson replaced was Ron Atkinson, who was sacked in November 86 when United were in a very similar league position. So I think the atmosphere is too toxic around the club. For me, January 1990, United don't win that game. United lose. Ferguson gets to chop immediately. That's my opinion.
Patrick, also, is he gone within a week?
Don't forget, it was only just 4 months before that, in August, that Michael Knighton was out on the Old Trafford pitch, you know, doing kick-ups and headers with the ball because he was going to take over the club for £20 million. And so there was a real toxicity around the club whenever even the people who were on the board at that time were looking to jump ship.
I have a slight difference of it. I'm not sure he's gone sort of within the week. I think he goes, but I wonder if he gets till the end of the season. And there's a couple of reasons. You look around, you know, in the seasons before that season, the season after, at the time, managers generally got to the end of the season. There was a handful, less than a handful, one or two during the season, and often a couple in early May with the last game or two to go to kind of get a head start on recruitment. So I kind of think Ferguson might get till the end of the season, because a bit like I said, like the banner goes up at the game in December and there's that toxic atmosphere, but he doesn't get sacked then. And there's another bad result and he doesn't get sacked then. And I think rather than the FA Cup being the kind of punctuation mark that they go, right, we're done, we're gone, I actually think in the real world, keeping them in it sort of constantly provides that stay of execution, but there's no one single bad result that they go, we're calling a halt to this now. So I think they kind of drift along. It's another season of meh, we're still a bit shit, nothing's happening. They start the lookout, but unless they get really sucked into relegation in, you know, February, March, April, I kind of think he might get to the end of the year and then is gone. I don't think he's there the following year, but I wonder if he gets a little bit more time to see out the season rather than why change in January unless they're fighting relegation, which is a separate question.
I can tell you why I think he would have, because Ron Atkinson got sacked on the 6th of November to open the door for Ferguson, which of course was only 3 months into this into the season. So this board did have history when it comes to sacking managers mid-season when they weren't performing well.
Yeah, look, I think we all agree that amazingly, we all agree that he would have got sacked. That he wouldn't have survived that season if United don't win the FA Cup. It saves his career. So that in mind, Patrick, we might go to you first for this as well. Myself and Ger have done a little bit of research here, but again, you were have more memory at the time and you might have had done a bit of reading. We're kind of, it's very curious to think who would have got the job. Well, any thoughts?
First, whenever I first sort of pondered upon this, I think back to who were the young managers who were coming through with, you know, a great desire and actually did go on to build foundations that were successful for a club. And I have to say, I think about George Graham at Arsenal. Arsenal have dropped off to much to the delight of one of our hosts here over the last 10 years. However, I think a lot of the success that Arsene Wenger went on to achieve was actually based off the foundations that George Graham had laid for their club. You know, he really solidified their defence and their ability to become the boring Arsenal that would go on to win cups, leagues, you know, European Cup Winners' Cups and things based off the bat of 1-0s. And I think where Arsenal actually lost it is when they sort of lost their English core and they sort of moved towards, I think they were the first team ever to have a non-English to have no English players in a starting lineup.
I think so, yeah.
I think George Graham would have been a man that they could have been able to bring into the club at that stage, because don't forget, United still had a massive income and they were still one of the richest clubs in the world despite the nonsense that was available. And of course, the levels of money wasn't what it was then. You could actually, as we said, you could buy the entire club for 20 million that August. I think George Graham would have been a good candidate for United at that stage.
I think he ticks a lot of boxes. As you said, he's like, he's British. He's the right age. He played for United, didn't he? I mean, he was a United player for a number of years, I believe. My question, and I think the money is probably the answer to this. You know, Arsenal have just won the league. Does he leave Arsenal to go to a struggling Manchester United?
I think, and maybe this is just me, I think the allure of United could be tempting. Mm. And United have got a couple of songs about Matt Busby turning down Arsenal for the same reason. You know, he says, even though you're doing better, I'll go to United because of I've heard of the Stretford Enders. And don't forget, United has a notorious sort of firm as well. They've always had this massive following coming back, you know, since the early turn of the century, but never mind then following the Munich air disaster, where the club is sort of, at least outside of England, sort of held with endearment for various reasons. So I think, and don't forget, these guys might have been getting paid hundreds of pounds a week back then, those managers.
Yeah.
Maybe thousands, but
you could double his money potentially by going from the league winners to Manchester United.
That's what I'm thinking, and because a lot of these lads went into pub ownership and things, and then, you know, whenever they stopped their playing career, so getting paid an extra couple of 300 or 400 extra a week may have been enough to tempt it. I don't know what the numbers were.
George Graham was definitely on our shortlist. Yeah, yeah,
and high up it as well.
Yeah. Who else would you recommend, or who else did you discuss?
We looked at a few out there candidates. Lou McCarrie was sacked by West Ham. He's kind of British, the right age, ex-United player, but probably wouldn't have gotten it.
Out of West Ham because he was involved in a betting scandal when he was at Swindon. Oh, so yeah. I doubt United would have touched him.
Yeah, probably. I probably wouldn't have got it, but the mad success that Joe Royal had with Oldham, they went to the FA Cup semi-final, was it, and the League Cup
in this
final.
Season, yeah,
this season, yeah, playing kind of mad fun attacking football. He hadn't managed in Division One yet, but there was something to him. Jerry, you put one name down on the list which I think is kind of brilliant, very familiar to people on both sides of the water, but probably almost more so this side of the water now.
Yeah, I threw this out as a real random kind of left fielder, and you're probably going to laugh at this, Patrick. Jack Charlton. And I think part of it is there's there's the danger of kind of reading history backwards and what we know now, and, you know, the style of football is very agriculture and all that kind of stuff. But his success at club level had been pretty remarkable. He'd won the World Cup as a player only, what, 24 years before it. He was available-ish. He'd have definitely left Ireland for that. And was a kind of proven successful British manager. I don't think he'd have got it, but I'd have put him on a sort of medium long list.
And his brother was on the board as well.
Whether that's good or bad thing.
Yeah. I think they were still getting on at that time, weren't they? Or had they?
I have to say, I don't think Jack Charlton was a bad manager at all. I think he played to the maximum strength of what he thought would get the results. And that's what 100%. You want for your manager. I mean, he didn't really rate the Irish generally. I mean, there was a lot of players that he thought, these guys can play in England and they might have silky skills and this and that. But I think the best way for me to get results out of this, you know, this rebel of Irish is to use these tactics.
And also at international level, where you don't get a huge amount of time to work with players on a training ground, it was something that was very quick and effective to coach and implement.
Absolutely. And also, some of the best days we us lads have ever had as football fans came from that man.
Yeah, so very much so. Yeah, yeah. Look, that's probably a different podcast to go down the Jack Charlton.
I don't think he gets it, but I'd put him in. If you were trying to come up with 10 candidates, he makes the top 10 for me.
I think he is there actually. I mean, I think that's a really off the sort of wall call, but it's a really interesting one actually.
It was sort of, it almost surprised me when I came up with it and went, Jack Charlton, Manchester United manager. It seems really alien, but yet you look at your Ron Atkinsons, your Dave Sextons, there's a template of kind of stock British managers that United are employing. So I just think he fits that. Dave, you're going to try
I kind of like the idea of, and I wonder because of the rivalry between the two teams, whether it would have happened or not. But Leeds haven't been promoted yet. They're still in Division 2, but Harold Wilkinson is leading them to promotion and he's doing a brilliant job. I wonder, could he be tempted to United? I don't know what you guys think about that.
Well, he went on to complete the whole set, didn't he? He won the league.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's a really good call as well.
Yeah, I just think that's an interesting one that you could be, like we're saying, be tempted by. I know Leeds are still a big club, they're a sleeping giant, and obviously he showed what potential they had by winning the league title only, what was it, 2 years later. But yeah, could he be tempted up to manage United? I'm not sure he gets it either, but there's one, Ger, if you want to talk about him, there's one that we talked about this a lot, and when you suddenly threw this name out, I kind of went, oh my God, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't take all the boxes. I think he takes a lot of them. But the one we sort of went is, does he get it? Is Steve Coppell.
Mm-hmm.
Again, English, young, playing pretty attractive football, former United player. And in this scenario where United have been eliminated in the third round of the FA Cup, his Palace team probably win it.
Yeah.
He's only 35, but is Steve Coppell a possible Manchester United manager in 1990?
I think that's a really good call as well.
I don't know how well he does, but I think he might get it.
Yeah.
Here's another one too you could throw out is Liverpool had a really, they went in and had great success from a fantastic player manager with Dalglish.
Yeah.
It sort of set a new template for that era, you know, and I'm wondering were they sort of looking at Robson as he was probably about 33 then, 34.
He
doesn't get up and down the pitch the way he did. Is he the guy to sort of pull forward? And you know, when we're bringing in these Paul Inces and these young lads, does Brian Robson get a player manager gig?
It did cross my mind, and I wasn't sure he was that old.
And his career is kind of nearly, like, injury wise, is nearly over as well. Anyway, and one thing I came across when I was reading up on this is. Another way that the fans showed their displeasure with Ferguson was what they would always chant Brian Robson's red and white army in the stand, but never chant for Ferguson's red and white army. So he was obviously massively popular. Like, even I kind of don't have huge memories of him as a player. I remember him lifting the trophy with Steve Bruce in 93, but even I kind of have this awe and reverence of Brian Robson. So yeah, I hadn't even really considered it, but I think that might be a great show as well.
That is another cracking show. The other one is the unrelated Bobby Robson, who was obviously, turns out, leaves England that summer after the World Cup. Any chance he could be tempted?
Oh, that must have been, he had them in top of the list. That's a really good call. Because where did he go after that? Did he go to PSV?
He goes to PSV, which, and there's a whole controversy over it. England say they're not giving him the not renewing his contract because he's been in charge, I think, since before the 86 World Cup, and that obviously got out in the quarterfinals of that. They had a terrible Euro 88. They're heading into what is expected to be a poor Italian 90. They don't renew his contract. So he decides, I'm after the tournament, I'm off to PSV. I'm sick of the press intrusion and the kind of publicity of being England manager. That, for me, is the thing that would put him off going, well, I'll go to England's highest profile club instead. But other than that, Bobby Robson ticks a lot of boxes. He's a little bit older than some of the other ones we talked about, for better or worse. Like he's 57 at the time. But I think he's another crack in check.
Do you know, I think when we look back with hindsight, he's a cracker. But I think the media were already so toxic towards the man that I think he went abroad for the rest of his career, apart from his later days with Newcastle, for a good reason. And it was because if you think social media is toxic these days, the way that man was treated by the British, the press, it was terrible. And I remember it because it was so vicious.
Considering how good a job he did, it never ceases to amaze how badly the British press treat like good, decent people and football managers, isn't it?
Because he gets followed by another one as England manager. I mean, Graham Taylor is such a fundamentally decent fella.
Yeah.
What about him? If the England job doesn't become available or doesn't go to him, is Taylor fit for United?
He was at Villa at that time, was he?
Yeah. He led them to second in the table that year. They finished second. It's what got him the England job, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think it could have came down to money and sort of the big allure of Manchester United. I think some of the names you're throwing out there, they must have been on a list. And the more sort of think back to players like the guys like Taylor and Robson and all those, it sort of more pushes Jack Charlton off the list for me.
Okay.
Because I think Jack Charlton is a winner. I think he's a World Cup winner. He's done fantastic in his football career. But when you look at some of the quality that they had around at that time, now when I think back to some of those British managers like Taylor, they were top class. You know, Koppel, top class lad as well. Like, you know, and this is when the 20 teams in the league would have had British and Irish managers back then.
Everybody sometimes wondered about how we play and the fact that we don't play the type of game that everybody would like us to play. It's not the prettiest game in the world, but it's a very effective game played by a lot of good players. People tend to forget that we've got people who are really good players in the English Football League. So we invented a game that would cause them problems and make it difficult for them to play against us. In other words, we inflict our game on the people. It's true.
But we've accepted Jack Charlton's not getting the job. Have we missed anyone? In terms of the rest of the shortlist that myself and Dave had come up with before the call, we'd thrown in and we can just say quick yes or no's if we want on these. Venables?
No.
I think not then. No.
I think they had their fingers burnt with Rack Atkinson, who was a similar sort of character, and I don't think they wanted to go back to that sort of showman type of guy.
Yeah, but one of our cons on this was a bit London, bit showbiz.
Exactly.
A really, really random one that I throw out in terms of, I wonder would United want to be seen to be bold, go to Europe, look at a foreign manager, Franz Beckenbauer.
I think it's easy to look back and think United was more of a international-minded club at the time, but I still think it was quite a Northwest regional-minded club, and I don't think they would have been able to cope with a man of that stature. Don't forget, he was best player in the world around that time.
Yeah,
yeah. Had he just become the first manager player to? He was the first person to captain and then manage his country to a World Cup win. Yeah, I think, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I think it would have been able to step down for him.
Probably, yeah. I mean, he was available in the summer is the only thing. But I know we've missed. The other, we had, like, with Andy Roxburgh in Scotland, Clough as a really bizarre choice, Jim Smith at Newcastle. I don't think there's anybody else. I mean, I think that's the list.
I think that is, yeah.
Who are we giving it to? Are we saying Graham and Koppel? Are we saying they're the choices?
Graham, Koppel. And you mentioned another good one there.
Bobby Robson, okay. Joe Royal.
Yeah, you know what? When you think about it, when you break it down to the two, Koppel's probably an easier snatch for United because of his history and because he's doing so well, and he's able to get a bunch of young lads like Ian Wright and those guys playing well and getting them to finals. So yeah, he you know, now when you think about him more, he, I probably put him down as top of the list from a board perspective, you know, when it comes to low-hanging fruits, you know, and they probably wouldn't have been able to pay that much for him either, because his allegiance to United, coming back to the club as a, you know, a sort of saving the day after Ferguson and these types of things, I think he could have sold that narrative quite well.
Yeah, he would have been desperate to get the job, so they wouldn't have had to pay him as much as someone like George Graham or Bobby Robson. Yeah, so...
This 31 year later retrospective Manchester United board are appointing Steve Coppell as the manager of Manchester United at some point in this spring to summer of 1990. How does he do?
Badly. I think he used probably, much like David Moyes, I think he seems like the right person for the job then and now, but I don't think he does well. I think you've still got a lot of, Patrick, you talked about it earlier on, the older players there, the big personalities that think they're Johnny Big Bollocks and are just not kind of pulling their weight. And I think Ferguson has that absolute steely self-belief in him that I'm not sure Coppell had. Jerry, you talked about him at City afterwards when we were talking about this beforehand.
Yeah, he goes to City, I think, in the mid-90s, doesn't he? And it's a reign that you can count in, I think, days rather than weeks. And the official reason is that he basically can't handle the pressure of the job. Now, whether that's something that happens in his career in the intervening time, whether a much more cocksure 35-year-old Steve Coppell going into Manchester United, that would happen to him, or whether it's just something that he wouldn't have fancied or wouldn't have been up to, I don't know. But it's something that happens later in his career. And again, we've discussed it on this, about that doesn't mean looking back 6 years previously it would have happened. But I don't know. I think he might have got it and not done too well either. I don't know, Patrick, what your thoughts are.
I think that's a really good analogy, actually, Dave, because it's like, it probably could have been a David Moyes type situation where he has done well with a club where there's less glare, less spotlight on him. And no matter what you do with Crystal Palace, you're going to be getting a pat in the back anyway. But go to United and the demand is, we don't want the FA Cups. We want leagues. These lot down the M26 are clearing up and we need to get back, we need to knock them off their perch. And I think that's a good call, actually, Dave. I think you might have nailed it there.
Yeah, I think when I say I don't think he does well, what I mean is I don't think he wins a league title.
No.
And I think United stay, I kind of, again, it seems so obvious to say now how big an influence Ferguson ended up being on United, but I really don't know if they become the force anywhere near. Obviously, I definitely don't think they become the force they did become without Ferguson, but I don't even know if they get close without him, because we might kind of talk about this a little bit later on, but the football universe is about to change so much with the B Sky B money that comes in 92 with the launch of football as a product rather than as a sport or a passion or a pastime. When the Premier League, it becomes about money, and Ferguson being in the right place, United being in the right place, all that confluence of events where this team, the beautiful red jerseys, the new stadium, the new Stretford End has been redeveloped in Old Trafford. They win the title with playing really attractive football, and that the kind of steamroller effect goes, the snowball effect goes on and on and on, and they become this juggernaut without being in a situation to win that first Premier League title. I don't know if United, do they become what Liverpool are in the 90s? Or Leeds after their league title, like it's, or Newcastle or another kind of sleeping, or one of the Sheffield clubs, like it's, I kind of wonder. I think Ferguson is that integral to the success of United that I'm not sure they ever reached. Maybe they might win a league title in between then and now, but I'm not sure.
I consider the top five clubs in England to be Manchester United, Liverpool, Aston Villa, Tottenham, Arsenal. Okay. The club I think United would have become without Ferguson, or Ferguson getting that success he did, is actually Spurs.
Yeah, Spurs, I think that's a good shout.
Spurs are a massive club with a following at every corner of this world, and they're adored. And I don't know how the new stadium's going to work with the fans. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic, but White Hart Lane was such an intimidating place, like those narrow streets, you know, in that corner of London and things like that. And that, again, that white shirt, you know, you had David Ginola, you had Waddle, you have, you know, these great players. Gaz, you know, I mean, like iconic players, like even Klinsmann coming, you know, one of the first big imports. Spurs were the first to step up in that regard as well.
But they don't win things.
They don't dominate. I mean, they can get close. You can have a Pochettino coming in. You can, you know, Ferguson would have probably been like Pochettino. He did it well enough and he got everyone's hope up. And in the end, it just wasn't enough. And the players, you know, he lost the dressing room, as they say. And the man was sacked and moved on. And Ferguson could be working in PSG now and already winning trophies somewhere else. And as someone who does have a, you know, an affinity to both Everton and Spurs, because they're also in my family, that's where I think United would have ended up, you know, just in that bracket of almost there, and but never quite getting there.
What does that do, do you think, to the Premier League then? I know, Dave, you mentioned this a bit, like in the 90s and the 2000s, there is this global force of a club who, you know, there's a time when United are basically winning, what, 2 out of every 3 leagues. They're just dominating it. And they become, certainly with that sort of 93, through the treble, through the kind of first, certainly the first half of the 2010s. But there's, as you said, they're back as champions by 2013. But United have become synonymous with the Premier League. If you take that out, who is winning all those leagues? What is the problem? I mean, do you lose narratives like, you know, surely without United hoovering up all that title, surely Liverpool don't go 30 years without winning a league. Surely you get a Spurs or a Newcastle or a Villa or an Everton win leagues. What is the product then without this? Or does somebody else step into the United gap? Do Arsenal become dominant? Do Leeds become dominant? What do you think happens if you take that United force out?
Well, let's go back to the start of the Premier League and let's look at the power of the Scottish Premier League at the same time. Whenever they were able to attract Gazza out of Italy, they were able to bring in, you know, Brian Laudrup and players like Henrik Larsson, some of the greatest European players of the time. The Scottish Premier League, I wouldn't say it was ever at that same level of the English Premier League, but it was a great league in those early days of that sort of initiation of Premier League status that sort of sweep through Europe. I think the Premier League and Manchester United at that time, along with the Sky money, almost were a marriage made in heaven, because you had this massive fan base who were thirsty for success, who were willing to pay, I think, $19.99 per month, which was no small amount, to get a Sky satellite put on their home with Sky Sports on it, and sit around their TV every, you know, Sunday, basically, what it would have been then, and you know, dial in for it. So I think it was almost a match made in heaven. And I believe that is why the Premier League is the most watched league in the world right now. I think if we had have been chopping and changing without sort of getting in, because it's almost like that Mayweather type of approach. A lot of people just disliked United so much, they were getting the subscription just to see if they could get beat this year. You know what I mean? So I think the fact that they had that dominance meant that there was enough people for United and enough people completely against United to sort of buy in. And there was such a wave of newness and optimism, and the fact they had Lee Sharp and Ryan Giggs and these handsome boys coming through, and then you had David Beckham and the next batch of people, Luke Chadwick coming in straight after, another handsome chap. You know, it brought in the women as well. And it actually, I remember many times watching, you know, with my sister, with my mother, we would, even when we didn't have Sky, one of my mates had it. I think they were the only person in our village to have it. And their living room was standing room, and there was conquering down room only, where the half the village would be in. And I'd say a third of that living room was the girls tuning in to watch Jarrett, Ryan Giggs, you know, whoever.
And that might never have happened if Ferguson hadn't been there and hadn't, like, that effect with Aberdeen, if he hadn't won that first trophy.
Well, second that year was Aston Villa, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think if they had won that league that year, I can't see that club being able to go on with Daly and Atkinson and those players and maintaining it over the next 3-4 years.
Here's a question I kind of want to bring in. I love this idea of kind of discussing the long-term implications for the Premier League, which is what you say there ties into something else that we want to briefly discuss, Ger, is what Ferguson gets sacked. Where does he go?
Yeah.
And one option of where he goes is Aston Villa finished second in the table in 1990, earning Graham Taylor the England job, which means the Aston Villa job is vacant. What if Aston Villa win that first Premier League title in 1993 with Alex Ferguson as the manager?
Yeah, good. That's a really good call. That's a really good call.
Do Villa become the United that we know in this alternative universe? Do you have Aston Villa, the monster?
It's a big club. They've got they had a huge stadium. They're in the second biggest city it's a bigger city than Manchester. They're a club with history. They've won the league more recently than Man United have. They win it in 1980. They win the European Cup in 81. Like, yeah, they're a big club.
Yeah. I think Aston Villa is an amazing club as well. Do you know where I think it could have ended up? And this is a really cocky, cheeky, off the reel. I think because Ferguson has he left Rangers in such a disdain. He was almost cast out of the club because they never really liked him. His wife was a Catholic. His mother was a Catholic, things like that.
Yeah.
Celtic finished fifth. Rangers won the league in 1990.
Yeah.
I think with his success in Scotland, I think any of the clubs would have took him back with open arms apart from Rangers, because they didn't need him. They just won the league.
Now, I totally agree. I think Celtic is a definite job that's available. The job isn't available in 1990 as it is it?
No, it's not available. But I think with a man who had done so successful, who had been so successful in Scotland, I think Scotland could have made it available for the man.
You think they would have? Was his stock that high? I mean, and you mentioned this at the top of it, you know, he's come to England and, you know, this confident fella coming down from Scotland and at the first opportunity in England has effectively failed. Do you think his stock is so high that a club like Celtic will go, we've done, you know, not great, but we're sacking our manager just to get this guy in?
Well, they finished 17 points behind Rangers and they were out of the European stage, the fifth out of the European. So I think, and I mean, I don't know. My issue is, don't forget there was still a very deep sectarian.
Yeah.
There is a very deep sectarian divide within Scotland anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't even think Paul McStay had went across the boundaries by then. So it would have
Mo
been
Mo Johnson
so
was around then, wasn't he? Wasn't the Mo Johnson?
Mo Johnson must have been around then, actually. He maybe was the late 80s.
Oh, yeah, because Souness signed him, didn't he?
Souness signs him for Rangers, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, good point. So maybe the first cracks in the dam had begun and possibly could have been an option for him to go to Celtic.
That's a good call. Because what we were looking, so we looked at actually, we didn't really consider too many jobs that would be made available for Ferguson, because we sort of went, well, you know, he's someone who's been sacked out of a job. It's possible, but it's more likely he'd have got one that becomes available anyway. And it's not a big list. Like, you look at it and you go, the Celtic job, Billy McNeil gets sacked from Celtic the following summer. So it is available anyway in June of 91. But as you were talking about it in the George Graham context about the money that people are on. Ferguson, can he wait a year? Or does he need to jump into something sooner? Because the jobs that come up, and this is a pretty exhaustive list in the top couple of divisions. In February of 90, there's Millwall, then there's West Ham. Millwall are going down from Division 1. West Ham are in the middle of Division 2. You've Middlesbrough battling relegation in the second division. You've Dunfermline then by the end of the season towards the bottom of the Scottish League. You've Wimbledon. You've Villa, which Dave mentioned. You've Hearts becomes available in September of 1990. Mm. Everton comes up, but that's really just they make room for Kendall, which frees up the City job. I think we could probably say Ferguson doesn't go to City. He probably doesn't go to Liverpool when Dalglish resigns in February of 91. The Coventry job is in between them. And then the other jobs in England and Scotland are Rangers, as we said, Celtic. But we're now into the summer of 91. Southampton, Chelsea, Villa again, and Spurs. I mean, they're the jobs that come up anyway. Does he have to take one of those?
You know, I think with the stature of his success in Scotland, the fact that he did win European Cups and things like that, I think a wrath of those clubs may have been tempted to make the job available for him. Not Millwall, none of those, I think.
No, but the big Scottish ones.
I don't know who was Spurs chairman back then? Could that have been a job for him?
So Spurs, Venables has been there since about 87, 88, and or possibly slightly later, 89. But in 91, actually, Venables becomes the general manager of the club. So the managerial job becomes available. Now, whether Ferguson will go in and work under Venables, who is getting involved, I think, in the financial side of owning the club as well. So it's not like they'd have shunted him aside. He was sort of part of the furniture.
Okay.
But like, I think Celtic is a good shout. I think in England, Villa is a good shout. I would also throw in one Scottish doubt and go, would Ferguson's ego, I mean, the Scottish league was much closer to what it, to the English league now, but would Ferguson have wanted another crack at England before he goes back with his tail between his legs to Scotland?
I don't think it would have been a tail between the legs type of scenario. I think there's more of a gap between the two leagues now than there was then. I still think England was able to attract the best of Scotland, but the last British team to win a league or to win a European Cup may have been Aberdeen with Ferguson, because they didn't get kicked out of it. Did the Scottish teams get kicked out of Europe as well?
No, and it was part of that reason why a lot of the big English players went to Rangers.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. So he was the last manager to win a European Cup?
Until he won it again in 91 with United, yeah. But obviously in this scenario, he doesn't win that trophy.
Yeah, what year did Aberdeen win the European Cup?
Aberdeen win the Cup Winners Cup in 83. So Spurs had won the UEFA Cup after that.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In 84, I think.
And Liverpool win the European Cup in 84 as well, don't they?
Well, yeah. But he's there, thereabouts, you know. But yes, I mean, so you think probably it's Celtic better?
I would go with Celtic. The only thing that would throw me off would be the sectarian element. But I think if Celtic were desperate enough, they could oversee it. And I think Ferguson is pissed off enough at the Rangers to also do it.
How does that go? How does it? Alex Ferguson takes over Celtic in, say, the summer of 1990. Italian 90s happening. The Premier League is a couple of years away. Rangers are, I think, where are they at in their multiple in a row? They're probably about 4 or 5 into a 9 in a row, are they?
4 or 5 in, yeah.
Scotland is about to, it's probably a good 7 or 8 years away from getting massively left behind by England. But what does that do? You've still got Souness across town, Liverpool legend managing Rangers. Ferguson comes back up from United to Celtic. What does that do to the Scottish division, Scottish Premier League?
I think that one of the first things it does is that it pulls in, like a vacuum, a lot of good Scottish players, both from England and from Scotland itself, who would want to work under this man, you know, who did play. Because the thing that even when I have looked back at some of the games from that time, the thing that stands out for me then is the quality of the football that Ferguson was playing. And don't forget, what I'm going to tell you now is a fact you won't even believe, but Ferguson, even though they won that that game against Nottingham Forest in the Cup, I think it was like the 20th of February before they won a league game, after going 11 games, you know, without any win. Like, they had a few draws, but they were winless for, I think, 11 games. But the quality of the football then, it seems to be, when I look at it, Ferguson's players would get the ball and start running towards the net. There was no sidewards passes. It was get the head up, run, get close to the goal as quick as possible and attack. And it actually, when I look at the standard of the game today, that football looks really refreshing. And these are dodgy pitches, big shots, you know, guys who are hungover. But football is better than what United are playing today or any other team that I see. You know, There's a lot of tiki-taki and sidewards passes, and, you know, it's a bit more suppressed, our football now.
There's a bit more joy in it back then, you think, yeah?
Seems to be more freedom, you know, trust in the players.
Yeah.
But ultimately, when Ferguson starts succeeding in Europe, I mean, he's part of that vanguard of making English football much more tactical.
Yeah, he learns a huge amount of maybe what Patrick, you might call the more joyless modern football from his away European games. Obviously, we know that there's his cavalier attitude gets found out time and again on the continent, and eventually he becomes very, very cautious in big European games, which leads to a lot of success. But yeah, it's like the football again. You would have seen it at the time, Patrick. Like the football that he's playing with Man United and the football he played with Aberdeen. I've watched a few videos of his Aberdeen team. They were hugely exciting to watch. Similar maybe to Brian Clough's Forest at their heyday.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting point you say about his tactics. I never really considered Ferguson to be a great tactician. I think Ferguson's strength, and I think his weakness was his lack of tactical awareness. And he actually did well when he had really good tactical coaches beside him. Yeah. You know, the Carlos Juarez and people like that who were able to sort of sit and, you know, go. It was no coincidence he was able to do well in Europe with Carlos Juarez, who then went on to become Real Madrid manager. And I think his weakness was his tactical awareness. I think his real strength was his ability to go to the lads, right, lads, go out and enjoy yourself. That was always what he said. Like, go out, express yourself, be brave. You're representing Man United. You've got a history behind you here of players who run towards their goal and try and get me off my seat. You know, I want to be excited here too, even though I'm the manager.
He obviously, he had good coaches around him, but he tactically clearly wasn't a fool. You don't do what you do at St Mirren, at Aberdeen, at United year after year without having a bit of tactical nous about you. But clearly that was part of his game. Part of his game and the way it was played was about confidence and man management and positivity.
Yeah, for sure. No, I don't think he was a mug for tactics, but I just think he'll never be regarded as, you know, one of the top tactical managers. Maybe it could be suggested that in today's uber tactical sort of sport that we're living in at the moment, how would he have dealt with that? Was just telling the lads to go getting really good players and getting them to go out and enjoy themselves sufficient? Maybe, I don't know.
I think he still would have done brilliantly, because I think his genius was his realization that tactics wasn't his strong point, and that he had the ruthlessness to change assistant manager every 3 or 4 or 5 years to freshen it up and to bring in new ideas, so that it wasn't just the same voices over and over again. When he realized, because he had huge tactical adaptability because of these changes in managers, and you see, you know, he built what, maybe 3 great teams at United with 3 different assistant managers. So I think that's a level of genius that he had that I think he still would have adapted to today's football in a similar way.
People talk a lot as well about, you know, managers now having like a 4 or 5 year cycle. And it's like Ferguson managed to you guys would have watched this closer than me, but does he manage to override that by having the management team having a cycle like that? He stayed around, but he refreshed the management team through his assistant manager or his coaches or whatever. Is that probably fair?
I think so. Yeah, I think absolutely. Yeah.
No, I absolutely think that for sure, because when you look at the career Brian Kidd had at United, you know, to get him through those first years of winning the leagues, only for him to go on to have a great career with City. But you look at the ruthlessness of Ferguson to be able to continually chop and change assistant managers. And I think his ability to get his players on board, but also his ability to cut those players off so hard whenever they dropped down a few percent in performance was his genius. And the man is, now that we can see how difficult it is to stay on the job, we can now appreciate how genius and how just unique he is as a human being.
So in terms of that unique skill, we're looking back on this in 2021, we're looking back on 31 years ago, Manchester United lost to Nottingham Forest on the 7th of January, and Alex Ferguson wasn't there. He ended up at Celtic. Is he still at Celtic until 2013, having led Celtic for 20 years and won multiple titles? Or what? And this is where these kind of what-if scenarios get even more and more difficult. Well, you know, what does the longer-term Alex Ferguson in his 70s look like in a scenario where that wasn't at Manchester United?
I'd say if he ended up in Scotland, I don't think he would have had the longevity. And I think he would have had the success. I just think it would have bored him too much. And he would have probably retired around the time when he first threatened to retire at Old Trafford.
So there's no statue, there's no stand anywhere?
I don't think so. I think because he's a Rangers player and a Rangers man, he would have been highly regarded, but I don't think they would be putting up statues and things like that of him at Old Trafford.
Yeah, and I think I think he would have done an amazing job at Celtic, and I think he would have stopped the Rangers juggernaut maybe a little earlier. Now, we know the Rangers were living on fantasy money for
borrowed time 90s, and borrowed money.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the financial inevitability of Scottish football falling behind the juggernaut of the Premier League, I think maybe even without his United kind of driving that money, I do think Scottish football would not have been able to compete in this globalised economic world. So they wouldn't have been able to challenge for European trophies. So he probably would have won a hatful of league titles and maybe a couple of trebles at Celtic, but or maybe around a similar record to Brendan Rodgers or something like that, or maybe even Martin O'Neill. But I don't think there's a statue built. I think he's just a really good Celtic manager.
Yeah.
This has been a really interesting chat through this what-if scenario where we've kind of decided between us that if Alex Ferguson gets sacked, there's probably no dominant team in England. Potentially, the league isn't as good. It certainly doesn't get the global reach and the global success that it is. And Alex Ferguson becomes a prototype Brendan Rodgers in terms of how he's regarded afterwards. One of the things I wonder then, do we lose, and it's a slight left field just before we wrap up, the football lexicon. I mean, those kind of phrases that Ferguson gives.
I knew you were going to talk about this.
If we lose the Ferguson, that dominant 20-odd years at United, do we ever have Fergie time? Is there another manager who ever gives the hairdryer treatment? What do we refer to as the last 2 or 3 months of the season, if not squeaky bum time?
Good question.
Well,
sorry, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say, for squeaky bum time alone, I am glad that Ferguson didn't get sacked, apart from everything else that he accomplished in the game. I use that expression probably once a week, never related to football.
Well, I can tell you this. I heard a really good quote from the people who run the NBA. I think this quote might be maybe 20. It might have been from the time of Michael Jordan. But they says, we're not in the business of basketball. We're in the business of creating superstars. And this was the NBA themselves who said that. And the more and more I look at our sports, football, and the global game that is, it's becoming more and more what the NBA openly said they were. It was about creating these superstars. People don't really support teams anymore the way us guys do it. A lot of people support players. And yeah. I can see that living here in Sweden quite obviously, where people will support the team that Zlatan goes to, you know. And
yeah.
Whenever I look at the fact that a great club like Liverpool, I don't know how many followers they have on social media, say they've got 15 million or 10 million. Some of their players could have, like Gareth Bale, for example, probably has a closer to like 50 or 60 million,
yeah.
You know. And our sport is becoming something which is superstar based, and I think the narrative that what was built around Ferguson would have been built around someone else. It just wouldn't have had the same weight because it wouldn't have had the same longevity, and we would have had our equivalents of squeaky bum time, but it would have been from a different perspective, because there's one thing about the media is they are great at building stories and the art of storytelling, and that's what we buy into. And Alex Ferguson was a great subject for the storytelling that we bought into for those 26 years.
What a lovely way to end the podcast.
Absolutely. Patrick, thank you so much. This was a lovely trip down a memory lane that was and a memory lane that wasn't.
It was an honor. And it's been great to chat with you. I really appreciate the sort of research and the dedication you guys have put into this, the depth. And I really will be tuning in from now on to hear all the other what ifs from a football perspective.
Football, by the hell.
Thanks so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Outside the Box. If you think things would have played out very differently, or especially if you think we've nailed it, we'd love to hear from you.
Or if you have any ideas for other interesting what-ifs, you can get in touch with us on Twitter or Instagram at whatiffootypod, or by email at outsidetheboxwhatif@gmail.com. We hope you tune in again next week, and please tell your friends if you like this show, and even if you didn't, tell them you did. I've been Dave Fleming.
I've been Jared O'Shea, and this has been Outside the Box.
Well, I do feel about the club is that you're never prepared for it. I mean, I thought I had good experience at Aberdeen, you know, 8.5 years there. I thought good experience as a player. which would have served me well getting into management. But you're not prepared, no one's prepared for the United job because it's just a unique job.